Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about John Carpenter's 1984 film Starman. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler Brands. Tyler, good having you back.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
I feel like I've been in a time capsule.
I know. It's definitely good to have you back. Joining us a little bit later, hopefully, will be Elizabeth Rapp, a writer for Film.com and Chud.com. And so hopefully that'll come through.
Chud?
But, yeah, Chud.com. It's pretty legit in the movie blog world. But anyway, I believe it stands for Cinematic Happenings Under Development, if I'm not mistaken.
So, touche. Even if you made that up, that's completely legitimate.
I didn't make it up, but aside from that, if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section, where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish up with listener voicemails and emails. So you can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. Tyler, I believe you have a game show that you wanted to debut. Is that correct?
Yeah. I wanted to introduce a new, I guess it would be a controversial yet contemporary game show entitled Is That Meta? Now, we throw this term around a lot, especially with movies and TV shows, but no one really knows the definition of meta. So the point of the game show is to roll off some scenarios and let the contestants determine whether that's meta or not. And hopefully 14, 15 episodes of this game show later, we can finally have kind of an exclusive and a general definition of the term meta.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and play that theme music and go ahead and get started.
All right. Oh, welcome to Is That Meta? Our today's contestant, of course, is the Not Just New Movies podcast host, Ben Pearson. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
What do you do for a living?
I can't.
No one cares. Let's go on with the game. So, to start off, and I don't know if they briefed you backstage, but the point of the show is I'm gonna use my cue cards here, and I'm going to roll off some scenarios of meta or non-meta situations, depending on your knowledge of
the popular
culture
meta.
And movies. And the term meta, I guess, yes, you can determine whether our scenarios that our judges have written up is actually meta or not.
All right, let's go for it.
All right, question or scenario number one. A book dictating the story in the comic book Dark Knight Returns. Is that meta or not meta?
So within the confines of the comic book, The Dark Knight Returns, there is a book that tells that same story. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
You are reading a book, like a literary book, only words about the comic book.
Ooh. I would have to say that's not meta.
Judges? Oh, nope, that's definitely meta.
Okay, all right.
Because the comic book is not a book. So reading about the comic book in a book, meta.
Okay, all right. Let's go to the next one.
All right. Keeping with the Batman theme, Adam West as the villain in Dark Knight Rises, meta or not meta?
Adam West is that's got to be meta.
Yes, that is correct. Judges,
all right.
Judges have confirmed that is definitely meta. Obviously, because Adam West is Batman in the 1960s, and to be a villain instead of Batman in Dark Knight Rises. It wouldn't be meta if he was actually Batman in The Dark Knight Rises.
Okay, I see. It's got to be some sort of variation.
That would just be a continuous storyline. Like,
right.
Dark Knight Rises would be a continuation of what happened in the 60s show. Not meta. All right, let's go to our third and final scenario. Michael J. Fox, managing a female singing group who specializes in singing the song Mr. Sandman. Of course, this was on Family Ties, if anybody is wholeheartedly familiar with the the episode scenarios dramatize. But in one episode, Michael J. Fox actually manages his sister's singing group, and they sing the song, or their popular hit is Mr. Sandman. Meta? Not meta.
I would have to say that's not meta, because Family Ties predated Back to the Future.
Judges? Oh, incorrect. That is actually meta, because, and this is the reasoning, Marty McFly actually went back in time to 1955. And therefore, that occurred before the 1982 premiere of Family Ties. So, actually, it's meta.
Because,
as we all know, Mr. Sandman was featured in the scene where Marty McFly was walking
back
around.
Back in the 1950s, yeah. Okay.
Hills Valley. So, all right. So, you gained, I think, 10 points for one correct answer, but you need to achieve actually 50 points to go to the next round. Mm. So, we have some nice... consolation prizes for you.
Okay, excellent. Well, that was Is That Meta, folks, and here's the outro music. So, yeah, email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the new game show.
Yeah, send us your meta situations.
Yes, do that.
I can't write these every week.
All right, well, let's move on into the proper show and get started with the character name game. Tyler, since you've been gone, the onus or the burden falls back to you to come up with the character for this week.
Oh, so I have to do all this whole meta game show and the character name game?
Yeah, man.
Wow, double duty. The character name game for this week is Alicia Nash.
Alicia Nash. All right, so we'll be thinking about that and return to it at the very end of the episode. For those just joining, the character of Alicia Nash has to be in some way related to a movie that was released this past Friday. So we'll come back and guess that at the very end.
Possibly.
Let's go ahead and move on into our media consume section. This is the part where we talk about any sort of special events we've attended or what we've been watching, anything like that. Tyler, let's go ahead and have you kick it off since you've been doing double duty. Let's make it triple duty. Go first.
All right.
Consumed.
Yeah, like I said, I've been watching episodes of Family Ties, which has been pretty awesome. Michael J. Fox's, I guess, beginning career on TV with Valor or Meredith Baxter Burney as the mother and that old guy as his dad. But the more important news is that Family Ties is being shown on this new channel called The Hub.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of it. And it's got a lot of old television shows and like new cartoons, and it shows like Batman Beyond reruns and Adam West Batman reruns and G.I. Joe Real American Hero cartoon reruns. Pretty solid channel considering, and I've written articles about how a lot of the channels in my cable package are pretty useless.
Mm-hmm.
With shit like Millionaire Matchmaker and freaking Jerseylicious and yeah. Bridalplasty and
right.
Jerseyplasty, I'm sure is a show that's going to be coming out soon.
Right.
So it's refreshing to see a channel that actually has watchable content. Also, speaking of reality television, Storage Wars. Have you seen an episode of this?
I have never seen an episode, no.
Oh, sir. It's very similar to Pawn Stars, except it's levels below the social ladder of Pawn Stars. Like, those guys actually own a business that is prosperous, but Storage Wars follows around guys whose, well, one guy's business is pretty prosperous, but the rest of them aren't very prosperous.
Uh-huh.
One guy just buys stuff because he likes collecting things. Another guy has a consignment shop, which is constantly empty because people just buy the stuff. And then so he has to go out and buy storage units that have things that he can put in his store. And then there's just this really old guy who's a rookie to the whole auctioning environment.
Uh-huh.
So he kind of wanders around. He never knows how to do things, and sometimes he'll get a good buy. Sometimes he'll forget that there's actually an auction going on, and so he just won't be featured in that show.
That sounds pretty questionable, Tyler.
It's actually really entertaining. You gotta check it out. You'll get hooked on the first episode. Like, what they do is they auction off these storage units because people just don't pay for it. Over like 3 months, they haven't put in their payments to keep their stuff in storage. So
it's
the
like
storage
repo storage units, basically.
Almost. Like, what they do is like the storage unit business owner or whatever, he auctions off the unit's contents. And so they bring in this auctioneer, Dan, and he auctions off the unit. So whoever pays the most in cash gets all the stuff in the unit.
Gotcha.
And then the units open back up and they can sell it to whoever they want. But it's like the content. But the catch is that you can look at what's in the unit, but you can't like shuffle around stuff. You can't go inside and move stuff around. Like you have to just bet on it or bid on it based on what you see from
the outside.
Yeah, so you could see like a bunch of papers and just be like, I'm not bidding on this. But the person who gets it probably finds like a treasure chest under all the paper.
I see.
So it's kind of a wild factor, if you will.
Yeah, okay. I can see how that might be interesting. And I mean, I know for a fact that you're not the only person that watches this because I just read an article the other day that said that the show is already got picked up for another season because it's doing so well. So
sweeping the country.
Yeah. All right. What else have you been watching? Anything else?
No, that's about it.
Okay, cool. Two things that I wanted to talk about. One is an animated film in the DC universe called Batman Under the Red Hood. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This, I believe, was directed by a guy named... Let me see if I can look it up here. Brandon...
John Carpenter.
No, Brandon Vietti. And... It's an animated movie, obviously, and it falls within the kind of Batman universe. It has a lot of the comic people. The screenplay was written by Judd Winnick, who wrote for the monthly Batman comic and stuff. The thing that kind of threw me off about this movie was I'm so used to seeing animated Batman with the kind of stock voices that we grew up with Batman the animated TV series, and Kevin Conroy as Batman and Mark Hamill as the Joker. We actually talked about that in our very first episode of this podcast when we were talking about all things Batman, so go back and check that out if you guys are interested. But this movie has Bruce Greenwood as Batman and Jensen Ackles from Bruce Greenwood, I think, was like the president in National Treasure 2, if that means anything to you.
Nope.
Yeah, I figured it wouldn't.
Wait, there was a National Treasure 2?
I was kind of joking with that. But anyway, John DiMaggio, who's the voice of Bender in Futurama, played the Joker in this.
Oh, okay.
So that was kind of strange, too, because he didn't sound anything like Bender, obviously, which means that John DiMaggio is a good voice actor. But still, it was just kind of a little surreal for me to kind of watch this movie that didn't have those normal voices that I was used to. Also, I don't know if you remember how recently you've seen this, but... the plot surrounds the death of Jason Todd, which is the second Robin in the Batman kind of mythos. Robin has been like the mantle of Robin has been taken up by a couple different people, three or four different people or something over the course of Batman's history. And this is the second one. And the character, I believe you were telling me in that first episode back in, what was it, the 80s or the 90s, like DC had this voting thing and decided whether or not this character of Jason Todd should die or not, and they wanted him to die. So anyway, this plot kind of surrounds the death of Jason Todd. But the thing that kind of weirded me out about it was Jason Todd in this movie looks a lot like Tim Drake, which is actually the third Batman, the third Robin, the one that kind of inherited the Robin name afterwards.
Right.
So it just kind of, I don't know, like animation wise, I feel like it left a little bit to be desired. There was a lot of, I was watching this with Pat and he was talking about the physics were a little bit off with the car chases and stuff. Like just things didn't look natural or look right as they did in the animated series. So I don't know. What did you think about this movie?
I thought it was pretty sleek animation-wise. I mean, I've gone back and watched Batman the Animated Series, and that one I can pick out a few critiques animation-wise, but still, it was pretty fluid for its time. But this one I thought was pretty slick. I mean, the voices were off a little bit. Yeah, you're expecting to hear the traditional voice actors, but once you get past that, I mean, it's a pretty riveting story. I mean, they bring in Ra's al Ghul and...
Yeah.
Try to explain away what's going on, and there's this, and like the Joker was originally the Red Hood, and I like Batman when it's it has to do with like crime lords and gang members and gang leaders fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that aspect is pretty awesome. And it also, you know, it deals with the different goals or different ideals on how to deal with crime. Like Batman is the non-violent or, you know, non-gun usage and finding them doing illegal acts, but then taking them to jail, while
right.
the Red Hood is more about, you know, using weapons and killing them,
mm-hmm.
you know, wiping out crime in a different way. And so you kind of see that. And then I think Neil Patrick Harris was the voice of Nightwing, which was pretty awesome.
Yep.
So any movie with Nightwing in it is and he was like lighthearted,
yeah.
kind of humorous, which is always kind of fun to watch, because I think in the comic books for a while, Nightwing's pretty depressing. He kind of approaches Batman's negativity as far as his war on crime. But
right.
in the movie, I thought it was pretty enjoyable to see Batman hook, you know, teaming up with Nightwing, and they kind of have different personalities,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty funny.
Yeah, I think story-wise, it was pretty good. I definitely appreciated, you know, what it was doing and how it did really kind of bring in a lot of these other characters with... basically, it's like a movie for people who know their Batman, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know
it definitely is.
I don't know how, like, regular, like, non-comic reading audiences would benefit from this movie, or if they
right.
kind of like it, because, like you said, there's that allusion to the Joker at one point being the Red Hood, and he makes a comment
yeah.
about how he wore the costume better or something, you know, some
right.
sort of offhanded joke like that. And if you haven't read The Killing Joke by Alan Moore, then you probably won't understand what that... you know, what that's alluding to. So,
the Killing Joke.
I don't know. I mean, it's, we can debate that all day, but
I did a comparison on the Sentinel where I read The Killing Joke and reviewed it. And then I read, Death in the Family, which is the Jason Todd story. And I really enjoyed Death in the Family, a lot more than, Killing Joke. So I think that's why I booted it. But, I think it did a pretty good job of, filling you in on what has happened at the beginning with, you know, the flashbacks, always useful.
Yeah.
Before getting into the real nitty gritty of the story.
Right. Yeah.
But
so
it's funny because the Death in the Family was written like 1988,
mm-hmm.
and that movie and the Red Hood story didn't really come out until like 2009, or that movie I guess came out in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But in the movie Death of Jason Todd, it was like 5 year span between the Death of Jason Todd and the Red Hood debacle.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Possibly meta.
Maybe. So if you guys want to check out that article that Tyler was mentioning, you can go to thesolarsentinel.blogspot.com and probably just do like a search for Batman or something, and you'll end up tracking it down over there. The one other thing that I wanted to bring up for me to consume this week was I got a chance on Monday night to see a theatrical screening of the movie Spaceballs, directed by Mel Brooks, and Bill Pullman was there for a Q&A with the audience afterwards, which was really awesome. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I love being in LA for, because that kind of stuff just doesn't really happen anywhere else. Like, Bill Pullman just randomly happened to be in town filming something and was like, okay, yeah, I'll do this. So it was pretty cool to see the movie in a theater like that, with, you know, kind of diehard Spaceballs fans, and then
nice.
Like this one person dressed up like the Mog, like John Candy's character, and
half man, half dog.
Yeah, and
I'm my own best friend.
Exactly, and people, yeah, were doing, you know, kind of saying the quotes quietly to themselves as the movie was going on. It wasn't like a big obnoxious thing or whatever, but I heard some people kind of muttering quotes to themselves and giggling.
I love that movie.
And then Bill Pullman was actually really awesome. I managed to record the entire conversation and transcribe all of it out and put it up on geektyrant.com. So you can go there and just, you know, do a search for Bill Pullman. You'll probably find it. Bill Pullman's
you can link to it on the link to it on the podcast article.
Oh yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. So I would recommend, you know, checking that out if you're a fan of Independence Day or obviously Spaceballs or Mel Brooks or anything. Pullman talked about all of those things. It was really cool to kind of be there and experience that. So
Quick question. Does Bill Pullman listen to the Not Just New Movies podcast?
I'm not entirely sure. I would doubt it very seriously, but maybe one day. Maybe we can get him on as a guest. How awesome would that be?
I think if we Twitter follow him, he'll... You know, what's he doing nowadays? Is he the guy that's in that polygamy show?
No, that's Bill Paxton.
That's right.
Bill Pullman actually is working on a TV show called Torchwood, which I guess is sci-fi.
In some way.
I've never seen it or really heard of it, but
I thought that was that Western show.
That was Deadwood.
Deadwood, yeah. Never mind.
All right,
that was a sequel to Deadwood.
Deadwood becomes
Torchwood.
All right, so now that we've wrapped that up, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Starman.
In 1977, Voyager 2 was launched into space to the outermost regions of the universe. It carried an invitation in all languages for alien life forms to visit our planet. Someone, somewhere, listened and accepted our invitation. Get ready. Someone is coming. Someone like no one she has ever known before.
Can you clone a living organism from the hair of a dead man?
We're hypothesizing a technology that's probably 100,000 years ahead of us.
He has powers we cannot imagine, and the face and touch of the man she loved.
Sends greetings.
What's the matter with you?
How much English do you understand?
I understand greetings in 54 times Earth languages.
Do you seriously expect me to tell
present that an alien has landed, assumed the identity of a dead house painter, and is presently out tooling around the countryside in a hopped-up 1977 Mustang?
You're not from around here.
Joining us today is Elizabeth Rapp, writer for Film.com and Chud.com. Elizabeth, thanks so much for coming back, joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Absolutely. Despite my tardy...
Yeah, not a problem. Not a problem.
Tardiness.
Okay, so we're here to talk about Starman. This movie was directed in 1984 by John Carpenter. Let's kind of go around very briefly and just give kind of general thoughts of the movie. Elizabeth, let's start with you. What did you think?
I love this movie. it's weird. Like, my mom and dad let me see it as a kid, which I'm kind of surprised about now that I've seen it as an adult, because it's quite mature.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, as a kid, I was always, you know, it felt like an E.T. with a man. And now that I've grown up, it's like this heart-wrenching, you know, sci-fi love story. I love it. It, like, plays on all my buttons. I shouldn't admit that, but it totally does.
Nice.
Oh, now we know.
Yeah. I'll let you guys know. I feel like that was a really glib thing to say, but I'll let you guys run with that.
All right, Tyler, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it was an epic, yet simple tale of love and outer space. I think I described it as Road Trip meets E.T., but that kind of insinuates that it's a comedy, but it really isn't. It's more of like a serious retelling of this human's interaction with outer space and, you know, kind of the aliens seeing what we're like firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like more of like a... where the alien is completely oblivious to society and how things work here, and which could be, and I'm sure we'll get into this, it kind of could be a comparison to like the state of man being blank, and whether we're necessarily good or necessarily evil from the beginning of our social structure, you know, how society has shaped us. But overall, I mean, I thought I'd see like some. You know, John Carpenter obviously did Halloween, so I thought it'd be more of like a suspenseful thing. But you really don't. I mean, it is like a love story, basically. So there's a lot more of that than there is suspense or interaction with the army and the government and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I liked it a lot as well, and I wasn't really expecting much. I watched the trailer, and obviously, I mean, the trailer came out in 1984, and trailers were cut way different back then than they were now, and I wasn't, like, a huge fan of the trailer, so I didn't know how much I would like this movie, but, and especially, you know, Tyler, like you said, being directed by John Carpenter, and I almost exclusively know him from Halloween, and I haven't really seen a lot of his other movies, so I'm not really sure kind of what his stamp as a director really looks like. And I was kind of expecting the same type of deal, you know, more suspenseful and kind of, I don't know, maybe more like creepy or a little bit more heavy on kind of action or something. But it was kind of a like more of a contemplative story, I felt like. You know, it does kind of deal with these big issues that you mentioned. And Bridges, I mean, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but he gives an awesome performance. You guys mentioned, both of you actually mentioned E.T., which is kind of cool because I was looking this up, and the Wikipedia page says that the script was being developed at Columbia at the same time as another script about aliens, and the studio chose to go with this one over E.T. So wow. That was kind of a, I don't know, I mean, obviously E.T. is like one of the best known science fiction movies of all time, and Starman definitely is not, but yeah, it really does kind of feel similar to E.T., I think, and I've never been a fan of E.T. I don't really know what you know, both of your relationships are with that movie.
I love that movie.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
That's a childhood classic.
That's how my dog got his name, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it Elliot?
Yeah, Elliot. Well, he was named after Billy Elliot because he danced as a puppy, and he still does. It was, he had this sort of, like, nerdy, mopey attitude, and so we were like, Elliot from E.T., and it's fitting really well. We always say Elliot.
I think that makes me like a bad film fan for not liking E.T. That's just one of those movies that doesn't...
Well, it's one of those movies people have a really strong reaction against. It's like, there's no middle ground of people saying E.T. is okay.
Yeah.
There's people like, I love E.T., it like shaped my childhood, and there's people going, I don't like it. It sort of depends, I think, how old you were when you saw it, too. I mean, it's like people who saw it as an adult or maybe as a teenager don't really like it, but people saw it as, which is a really traumatizing movie when you're a little kid. So I'm kind of surprised any of us have really warm feelings towards it. Because, like, I mean, it's one of the, it's the first movie I remember seeing in the theater as a kid and just sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. Sorry, you should hate it.
Yeah.
Like, I really should hate that movie. And I love it.
But I definitely think it kind of plays on a lot of the same maybe emotional beats that E.T. hit, but just like you said, Elizabeth, with a guy instead of an alien, like man.
And I think it sort of it says something about the time that both of them came out, and there was a real sort of theme in the early to mid 80s of that, like, friendly space visitor, evil government. I mean, it probably has a lot of like Reagan, and even I guess probably some of that Star Wars Soviet,
the Kremlins.
Yeah, the Kremlin stuff. Because it's like it's weird, and I think I've read about it in other, like, in sci-fi journals and things like that. But that you can actually, the whatever the politics of the time is, whatever we do alien movies. And it's like, we obviously had a real fear of the government in the 80s, because it was like every alien movie is the government will come and take your alien pet. I mean, whether it is Jeff Bridges or whether it is E.T., they're going to take him and cut him up while he's still alive. And like, then we got into the 90s and it was like, oh, they're going to kill us, and the government is the only thing they can stop
it. Really?
You know? Cause you had the whole
Welcome to Earth.
Thing, you know? Both were bad. Then you got sort of that thing going in the late 90s, you know?
Right.
Government conspiracies and alien conspiracies, and we're all gonna die.
And now it seems to be more like alien invasion movies than like visitation stuff. Like, it was
basically, we're screwed
if
aliens come because we're so disorganized. But yeah, it was
go ahead, because
I was just gonna say, it was weird because, you know, E.T. was all about government conspiracy, and like the government was really, really active in that movie. But Starman, like you said, Elizabeth, it was really the romance between Steve, clone Steve.
Yeah, clone Steve. And there's sort of like this backdrop that kind of come together at the end. But it doesn't really feel like a threat until the last, like, I think 20 minutes, which is interesting. And I guess E.T.'s like that, too, if you really think about it. It's like you see them walk around with the flashlights and stuff, but...
It was a lot spookier, though, in E.T., because you're a kid and you see these faceless, radioactive suits or whatever they were, like, wandering through the woods looking for them, and then, like, Elliot And I know we're talking about E.T. a lot, but...
No, go for it. Go for it. It's totally fine.
It's a lot spookier in E.T. that, you know, I wasn't really threatened by the government agents and stuff, man.
Both of them have the kind of, like, nice... Because, like, the government... And actually, in E.T., they sort of end up secretly being nice, even though they're really menacing at first. And then you have that whole, like, well, he came to me too, Elliot. I've wanted this since I was your age. And you have the guy in Starman, the SETI guy, the same way of, like, well, I've always wanted... to see alien. I mean, this is what I've worked for my whole life, and I don't agree with, welcome to Earth, now we're gonna, like, chop you up into bits.
Right.
You know, so he, like, rebels, and you have the Peter Coyote character doing the sort of same thing of, you know, oh, I'll drive after the ship to go see it, but I won't tell anybody else, you know? Like,
yeah.
I think that's interesting, like, both movies have this little, like, you have these government conspiracies, and you have, like, the nice guy who helps the alien at the very end.
Yeah, I think it's more of just kind of a plot device to make it, to up the stakes a little bit, and make it feel like there's some sort of reason for them to be traveling across the country, or across a city, or whatever the case was in E.T.
They went so far in this movie.
Yeah.
They did.
Madison, Wisconsin to Arizona.
Yeah, to Vegas, and then back to Arizona.
Yeah, and then, Vegas.
So, yeah, let's get into, like, some of the specifics and stuff. Is there anything that you guys kind of noticed maybe this time around if you'd seen it? This was the first time I had seen this movie.
This is, like, the fifth or sixth time I think I've seen this.
Nice.
It's funny, as a kid, like, the deer part was always what I remembered. Like, I remember the deer and the marbles, and then it wasn't until I saw it again as an adult, and I just saw it again as an adult very recently, and then I watched it last night because I knew I was doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the part where he actually, like, grows into Steve, like, mm-hmm. really is gross. I mean,
yeah.
I did not remember that as a kid, and I didn't remember, it was weird seeing it again, like, I had remembered him just being Jeff Bridges, and then I didn't remember his, like, little bird alien thing that he did. And it's incredible. I mean, it's a very, you know, this movie kind of has gotten a lot of flack sort of in the, you know, 90s, even, like, early 2000s. And now that Jeff Bridges is having this renaissance, people have gone back and looked at it and said, what a great performance. And it is, like, the way he even walks initially, like, when he's first a human.
Yeah.
And it's very physical, and it's... Yeah, I mean, I guess in retrospect, it's kind of corny because it doesn't have special effects and it really relies on his quirky, like, you know, stuff. But it's pretty cool. And I think it's almost more effective because it's so low key. And that sort of struck me the more I've watched it as an adult. Like, you know, this is a tight movie. I mean, you know, I guess, like, the Vegas thing's a little eye rolling, but you know, it's a very
oh
tight,
God, we're in,
you know,
Vegas.
Yeah, simple movie, and it's kind of effective, and I think that probably says something more about the more elaborate, you know, filmmaking has gotten, and the sort of MacGuffins and quirky side plots and characters. It's just, you know, point A to point B with very little going on in between. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I think the movie would not be anywhere near as effective without Bridges' performance. You know, if you insert some other actor of the time doing something that maybe is a little more overstated or a little more understated, it's kind of the perfect performance for this specific movie, I think. And I didn't have any idea that he was actually nominated for Best Actor at the Academy Awards for this movie. And I was like, you know, after seeing it, I was like, oh, okay, I understand that. But I had no clue going in. So, it was really awesome.
Yeah, people will say actors are good because they can portray emotions, even though they're not feeling those emotions, whether it be sorrow or anger or what have you. But then you get a character like this guy who's emotionless, and his only real emotion or physical look would be curiosity. You know, he doesn't get angry, he doesn't get sad, he doesn't get, I mean, he tries to feign happiness by smiling, but he's, you know, he's just kind of doing like a,
yeah, it's very forced,
what he sees in pictures or what he sees people doing, you know, it's not a genuine smile. And I thought, as far as Bridges acting, like, he, you know, he didn't look happy when he smiled. Like, he smiled as if he was trying to fake a smile, like an alien would do. So it was really good.
And, like, well, go ahead, Elizabeth.
No, go ahead. Well, you've seen it the first time, so I'm, like, really curious.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you're talking about him not really showing emotion. I think that's true for almost all of the movie until it gets to, like, the love scene in the train.
Weird.
And yeah, it was a little
weird. How'd they get on that train?
It was a little weird, but that also was a scene where it's showing him kind of like experiencing these things through this human body. And it's like, and him eating the pie also in the diner, those things are just like that. It's like that sense of wonder and kind of awe. And I really totally bought that, you know, like I believed that he had never eaten that piece of pie before and never experienced that taste. You know, that was the kind of, those are the kind of little moments I think that are kind of peppered along the way throughout this movie that makes it, that makes that performance really great.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that about the end too. Is I think he has the really robotic thing, and the more you watch it, the like at the end towards he starts to sort of more humanized towards the end, and he even says that, you know, well, perhaps I'm becoming more like Earth person. And yeah, in the train he's sort of a little more relaxed, and you know, by the time they actually, you know, he says goodbye, he's quite, you know, when he says I love you, you believe it. Like he's suddenly like, his body and his mind have kicked in together finally. Mm-hmm. And you know, he understands what she's talking about, and it's like, it's just very subtle. And it's like, oh, that's, I get it. Like, I don't think I've caught that until this last time that I watched it. It's like, oh, you know, he really is like growing into a human, and just as he has to leave. It's really, you know, and as a kid, I was like, oh, he ran out of marbles. That's why he has to leave. It's not, it's like, he has a very, it's very Blade Runner-esque, but he only has a limited window that he can, you know, walk around in this body.
Nice Blade Runner reference. I love it.
Yeah, I try.
Tyler, was there anything in particular you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, there was also the idea that there was, I mean, for a couple, except for a few instances, there wasn't really any violence as far as the government versus them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would think they'd be like, I mean, they did shoot at them at the end, but they didn't hit them.
Yeah.
And the only other gun usage was by the police when they were trying to get away from him. But you would think like, oh, right away the alien has the gun, he will use it all the time, he'll shoot somebody by accident or whatever. And you don't see that, and at one point he says, you know, I mean you no harm. So that's kind of like one of those, you know, positive hopeful messages where, you know, we could have this interaction with outer space species and not have to be violent towards them.
Yeah, and especially like contrast that with the humans' reaction to seeing the spaceship come in, where they just freaking launch planes and have them like just fire weapons on this thing. And what's his name? Mark Sherman, the SETI guy, like said near the end of the movie, he's like, we sent this invite out to them. Like, what the hell are you guys doing? So that's,
we invited them here. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, why are we going to cut him up on a operating table, you know, when, yeah, come on over to our planet, we're just going to kill you and cut you up.
Yeah.
And I think that was a good message to send as far as, you know, the path we can take, whether we wage war with visitors from outer space or whether we, you know, introduce them to our planet.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me a little bit of some of the early Star Trek movies, like those middle Star Trek films with Shatner, where, you know, they were dealing with the Romulans and stuff, and it was very clearly like kind of a metaphor of the time and the relationship between this country and Russia and some of the other things too.
Right. Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Right, thank you. And there's also, you know, when Bridges' character is explaining what it's like on his homeworld, it sounded very much kind of like a Star Trek vision of unified, you know, kind of planetary systems and stuff like that.
Yeah, like a peaceful utopia where everyone coexists peacefully.
Yeah, just like one language uniting the world and stuff.
Yeah. The other thing I thought was cool was that SETI is actually a real organization that constantly sends out messages into outer space and hopes for a bounce back. Mm-hmm. Like they're always on call, whether something comes back to them from, you know, wherever in the galaxy. And I thought that was really cool.
I think the only like SETI oriented movie is Contact. Like that is all, I think that was the first time I'd heard about SETI, and that like it's all SETI. It's like, it's just about the, you know.
Yeah, there was like a PBS special or a Nova special on SETI once, and I got really I got really psyched when I watched it.
I always thought that would be like the coolest job, but also probably the most disappointing job.
Yeah, most boring. Yeah. Especially if you've been like 25, 30 years in the same office just waiting. Because I think they've been doing it since like the 60s or something.
Yeah, I think so. And you just know, like, as a SETI scientist, like, the minute I retire, like, that's when he's
going to show up. You got to be kidding me.
Like, the day after retirement, he wakes up, you know.
Yeah.
He, she wakes up.
Can't let you wait. You retired yesterday.
And then District 9 happens, and it's like, no!
Well, Elizabeth, you've seen this movie way more than us. Is there anything else that kind of stood out to you maybe on this time around, or anything else in particular?
The thing that really stood out to me both times as a grown-up, because I watched this as a kid, and again, I see it now, and it's like I'm blown away that, because I don't think I picked up so much the like widow love story angle when I was a kid, and it's that part of it's really haunting and sad, and I, you know, as a kid, you're just like, oh, that's her husband, and he came back, and like that part of it is so, I think, depressing to me, and it really adds sort of the double thing of, is she really in love with, you know, the clone Scott as
right.
an alien? Is she in love with him because it's basically her husband returned?
Yeah.
And when she says that at the end about, you know, I'm never going to see you again, and it sort of goes both ways. As if she's gotten this last week with him, but it wasn't exactly him. And I had forgotten the thing about the baby as a kid, and that is like a really neat twist, because, you know, I have to, as far as like a love story and a love scene, it's probably one of the most organic kind of ways that story can unfold. I mean, it isn't, you know, so many movies just kind of cram it in there like, oh, they're in love, and it's like, oh, I don't buy it.
Yeah.
And this like really forms organically, and the whole twist about the baby, I think, is really a neat twist, and it's not ham-fisted, or I mean, I guess depending on, you know, some people probably find it ham-fisted, but I really like it. And I think if it came out today, it strikes me that line about, if you don't want the baby, I will stop it now,
mm-hmm.
would probably really piss people off.
Yeah.
I could totally see that being a lot more controversial than it was, you know, in the 80s without the blogosphere and
mm-hmm.
people picking up on little lines of, is this being political about abortion or something? Because it's kind of like, you know, it's a little bit of a hot button right there, but in the 80s it was like, oh, no biggie.
Yeah. You
know? Well, yeah, it's,
you know,
it's cool.
You kind of throw stuff in there, and you know, abortion didn't, the culture war thing hadn't really started as of that point, so you know,
it's cool you bring that up, Elizabeth, because I thought that was a real positive for the movie, because at the beginning she's real depressed, like drinking herself, watching films, like probably not going out into the world a lot, kind of focusing on her husband's death. And then this alien comes along, looks just like him, and the whole movie is her kind of, not mourning, but dealing with the life without her husband.
Yeah.
And the question whether she loves the alien or the husband, I think it's more, she's kind of now to the point where she's dealt with the sudden death of her husband, and that she's kind of now ready to raise this child or go back out into the world and not be so depressed or introverted when it comes, you know, she's kind of like you said, that last chance with at least someone who looked like her husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a moment of closure. I mean, it's a really odd bit of closure, and you know, it's not,
you get a baby
husband
out of it.
Yeah. It's and I think it's almost like she feels like she got what she deserved in a way, because it's like this person gets ripped out of her life, and the idea that she's kind of bitter, well, we wanted kids, but we couldn't have them, and this idea that he sort of is able to give this to her, well, it'll be your, you know, the husband of your, you know, your husband's baby, but it'll also be mine. It kind of gives her both, that she gets, you know, whatever it is that she's feeling at that moment. And I think she's probably not even sure if you were. I can ask her, like, hey, you know, like, who were you in love with? It would be,
it's
like,
the,
you know, I don't really want to think too hard about that.
It's the best of hope both worlds, literally. Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Let's just hope it's not the alien symbiote that's growing inside her.
And I actually thought, because I remembered his accident, like, and I probably made it up because it's never clear how he died. And it's like, is it a hunting accident? Because she says that about the guns and guns making her nervous, and being that the car is intact.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he dies in some kind of gun accident, because that seems to be kind of a running theme of the movie and, you know, hunting and guns and her being uncomfortable with that. And
mm-hmm.
I think she just calls it an accident.
Yeah. And she just says, it's an accident. And even the SETI guy's like, oh, he died in an accident. It's not very clear what that accident is. And I don't know. It was kind of interesting.
I think we can make our own conclusions. Maybe that was part of the writer's goal, or they just were too lazy to rush the script. Oh, God, this guy died. How'd he die? In an accident. We don't know.
Well, this kind of my sister.
He drowned.
As we were watching it, because it was like, isn't it weird that the home video and the photo album, he's wearing the exact outfit that then the alien can somehow recreate from, like, energy? Because he doesn't, we're never shown him going in the closet and picking that outfit out, so I have to assume he makes it. Like,
yeah.
You know, or she gives it to him.
I think he pulled the red hat out of the car, out of the glove box.
Yeah, okay.
I think she puts clothes on him, too, before they head out, because he's naked for that good, a good 45 minutes in the house. In movie time, of course. Yeah. No, not movie time, like story time.
Yeah. Right.
She made tea for him, and he's still nude.
Well, you guys bring up the interesting point of, like, at one point, one of the government agents is talking to the SETI guy and says, can you clone a human based on a dead hair cell? And, like, that part of the movie, you know, where it shows this kind of blue light floating around in the house, and he, like, the image of Bridges kind of pops up out of this picture and does this little 360 and then drops back down. And then it, like, the camera zooms into this hair follicle that she keeps around, which is kind of weird in and of itself, but
used to do that.
It kind of deals with, I guess you're right, that's not that uncommon.
That was kind of a traditional thing,
but it kind of deals with that like issues that Jurassic Park brought up, you know, 10 years later, with like, is this kind of thing possible, like the cloning and all that stuff. They ask, like, not the government.
Well, remember, Jurassic Park was a book that came out, I believe.
Right, but I don't think it came out that much earlier than the movie did.
Okay.
But, you know, the government person says something like, you know, is this not possible for an alien species to do? Is it possible for you to do? Like, for us humans to be able to do this? Are we at that point technologically where we're able to do this? So I just thought it was kind of interesting that they were kind of mining a little bit of that territory that was obviously blown up on a huge kind of mainstream platform, you know, 10 years later. But
I don't know, we've been really obsessed with cloning for like a really long time, and they sort of always take the tack of, you can make a clone, but it ain't gonna be the same, you know. And that was actually something that, like, my sister and I were arguing about this time. It's like, if there's one really convenient plot point of the story, it's that the Bridges character, her husband, is dead. It's like, if he has no idea when the alien floats into her house, he has no idea that this person that he's cloning is dead. It's like, what if, like, he formed and then, like, the real Jeff Bridges walked out of the bedroom?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's kind of, again, a big question mark there. Yeah. I guess as a kid, I thought there was a Starman too, but I don't think there is.
I think a sequel to this movie would ruin it.
Oh, it totally it's one would. Of those. I'm kind of surprised they've never done it. Like, especially now, with Tron.
Right.
I'm surprised they didn't dig up Starman too, be like, oh, we could, like, have old Bridges as, like, the teacher. And
Yeah, I think there was a news article recently that I saw on, actually, Ben, Geek Tyrant. That was about Bridges talking about a new Starman.
Oh, man.
And I hadn't seen the movie yet, so I was like, oh, sweet. Maybe it's like an adventure film.
Yeah.
But now that I've seen it, I think a sequel to this would be.
It ends, I think, perfectly. Really ruin it. You should think you're getting into, like, the Fly 2 territory, I think, and that would be
oh, God,
bad.
The Fly.
There was one thing, like, two things, actually, that I wanted to bring up that were kind of, I don't know, nitpicks, maybe, just kind of weird things that I noticed. The state trooper. Those two cop guys who get the order to wait for them and, like, let the feds show up and take all the glory and stuff. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They, you know, that one guy's like, maybe we can make some sort of life-threatening situation or whatever. And, like, they end up chasing him down the street and blowing Karen Allen away with a shotgun out of the window. Like, what kind of protocol is that for any organization of the law? You know, that's ridiculous. They didn't do anything.
She did have a gun, or he did have a gun.
Yeah, he picks up the gun, but that's still pretty far out. Like, I mean, they're not
shotgun,
like,
handgun.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, as a nitpicky thing, like, the fact that he, you know, she dies, or at least gets very close to death, and he brings her back, that's kind of dropped.
It's never mentioned again, exactly.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you had this gaping, like, hole in your side because they blew you away. She's never like, oh, I was so close to finally, like, reuniting with my real husband.
Right.
I mean, I was, like, waiting for that to happen. I think that's happened you know, the last few times I've watched, like, oh, this is like a part where she, oh, it doesn't, okay.
Yeah. And like when she wanders out of that trailer or whatever, she like, it didn't really show her clothes very clearly, but it didn't look like she was bloodstained or had like a massive hole in her clothes. And she didn't acknowledge that at all. She just kind of walked out like, okay, I guess I fell asleep for a while. And then they just never came
back
to it. Yeah,
he's like, it's bad for your health to be with me. You know, and he mentions it and she's like, what are you talking about? Kind of like,
yeah.
That's so cute that you're worried. It's like, he has a reason to be worried.
Yeah. Maybe those marbles do dry cleaning too.
and short-term memory erasure.
Yeah, they do everything.
Well, you know, I wouldn't want to have my rib cage shattered by a shotgun.
That's
so,
probably
true. Know,
and dude, the last one's going to do her taxes every year for the rest of her life, which is pretty convenient.
The baby will know. I hope the baby doesn't waste it. Like, you know, she walks in and he has like an elephant and he's like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he uses it to get a cheeseburger or something.
Exactly. I was waiting on him to give her like some sort of time constraint on when to bestow it onto the child, as opposed to just giving it to him when he's an infant and having him throw it out a window or something. But
yeah, wait until he's 18, please.
Yeah,
Elliot, no. It's ironic that the young boy is named Elliot.
In your potential sequel.
Yeah.
The one other thing as far as a nitpick goes, this is actually not more of like a story issue, but just more of I thought this was really funny. She's in that diner, and I think it was actually right after that scene we were just talking about. She comes out of the trailer, goes into the diner to look for Bridges, who has hitched a ride with that other dude to kind of take off towards the crater. And she, you know, hears from the waitress at the counter that Bridges left, and she goes, I need somebody to take me west fast. And like this one dude just jumps up, you know, everybody gets really quiet. This one dude just jumps up and you're like, all right. So they like start driving, and then they finally catch up, you know, they're in some sort of ridiculous hot rod or something. And they eventually catch up to the roadblock, and she goes, I need you to do me a favor. And then the next scene is him lighting a barrel of gasoline on fire and hurling it out into the side of the road. It explodes. And then he just peels out and drives away as the entire army chases him down. I'm like, who is this guy that's willing to do these things that he's never met before and, like, put, you know, endanger, like, potentially lock himself away in federal prison?
You know, she slipped him a 10 spot.
Yeah, I said that about, like, I would deeply suspect anybody who jumps up that fast, like, me, I want to do it. like
gasoline on fire? Sure, no problem.
Yeah. So maybe he's like, he just instantly fell in love with Karen Allen. He's like, I'll do anything for this woman. Like, and then like the fact that he never gets rewarded for it never hurts
yeah.
him.
Yeah, he never.
Yeah, I'll call you junkie. Later. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
He loves the rush.
Maybe she goes back to him after the crater incident.
She's like, thanks a bunch, you know.
That was one thing that
like in lockdown.
That was one thing that we didn't mention at all, really, is Karen Allen in this movie. And I think literally the only thing I've ever seen her in is the Indiana Jones films. And I thought she was really good in this. Like, I for some reason wasn't.
Yeah. She wasn't Scrooged.
She was in Scrooge. Oh, yeah, you're right. I just saw that recently, like within the past month or something. I really should have remembered that. Thanks for calling me out. but Scrooge, she was kind of like a disposable character. But here she like actually gave, like, I thought she did some really great work in this movie.
Yeah, she's really good in it. And it's one of those, I really wish she had worked more. I know that she had issues with being like a single mom, and that's why she kind of dropped off the scene. But she's so good. And it's one of the, watching it was like, you know, there's just not many actresses that have that sort of believable run around with no makeup but still look very pretty and ordinary and like somebody you'd find in a cabin in Montana. I mean, she really, really sells that to me. And like, I was thinking, like, nowadays if you made it, it'd be like Charlize Theron or Angelina Jolie, and it just wouldn't come off the same, you know? It just
Angelina Jolie by herself in a cabin in Madison, Wisconsin.
So sad.
Bullshit.
And it just, yeah, there's not many actresses I can buy that just sort of have that, blue jeans, plaid shirt kind of, you know, beauty and believability. And she worked so well in Indiana Jones for that exact reason. Like, you could believe she ran a bar in Mongolia and like kicked people's butts.
And drank them under the table.
Yeah, she just has that thing. And she's actually, if you've never seen Cruisin', it's a sort of mind-scarring movie, but she's in that too. And it's sort of back round role. She's not huge in it, but it's kind of interesting because she's like such a sort of clueless girlfriend in that as her Al Pacino boyfriend starts hanging out at gay clubs.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very...
Whoa.
Yeah, and the last shot is sort of like, what's going on there?
Okay.
So yeah, you should check that out. It used to be on Instant Watch. I don't know if it still is.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's sort of one of those I just need to wash my brain with soap movies.
Yeah.
Like, you know...
A
like,
burning palms moment.
Oh my god,
moment.
I'm never going to go to New York. Like in the, especially 70s New York.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, well, I think, I mean, we covered a lot of what I had written down here. Do you guys have anything else that you wanted to mention before we kind of wrap up?
I don't think so. Other than...
Closing thoughts?
Yeah.
Other than, like, it's such a tearjerker. Like, I didn't... Now that I'm getting older, it's like... Oh.
What's your suggestion to viewers, Elizabeth? Who would you recommend this to?
You know, I'd recommend it to just about anyone. That sounds so corny. But, you know, it's one of those movies, and I have this weird list that I maintain, and we're trying to turn a feature out of it, but it's like, it's a guy movie, and it's a girl movie, because you have the whole mushy love angle, and then you have the sci-fi sort of freaky John Carpenter angle, which is very subtle, this one. It isn't the thing, you know?
Or, yeah.
And it isn't really, you know, even Big Trouble in Little China. It's not that you know?
A Big Trouble in Little China reference. I love it. Yeah. You're two for two, rap.
So I think it's just kind of a, you know, a crowd pleaser that they don't make anymore. That you had a lot of in the 80s that was sort of like, you know, anybody, you could go see that on a date and both people would like it. Now it's like, we have drawn the line so sharply of girl movie, guy movie. And it's like a shocker when girls go see District 9, like, oh, girls go see alien movies? Like, yeah, we had Starman in the 80s, man. Yeah. Of course they go see alien movies.
Yeah, it's either Expendables or Sex in the City 2. That's it.
Yeah, and it's kind of, it's like, it's a, yeah, it's got such that road trip thing, you know, in it too, that I always find very appealing. I'm such a, like, addict for road trip movies. It's strange. That's I hate road trips, but I'm like, I love road trip movies.
You'd just rather just see one in 2 hours.
Yeah, it's like, I just want a road trip with Jeff Bridges in 2 hours. Like, any longer than that, like, screw this, I ain't going to the meteor crater. But yeah, I mean, I really, it has that sort of low-key grungy thing that you had a lot in the 70s and 80s, and I think anybody can kind of watch it. And it's not as, you know, there was such a, you know, when Bridges was not, it's not that he was ever on the outs, but it's like, that used to be a movie a lot of people sniggered about, like, Starman, it's so dated. It's like, now I think we can kind of, the effects are kind of dated, but, you know, it holds up. It holds up really well.
Yeah, and, like, the practical effects, I think, there's a couple explosions and stuff that looked really cool. Like, when when the cars almost hit on the road and that guy kind of comes over to help Karen Allen's character out when she says that she's being kidnapped, and Bridges, you know, kind of drops one of those marbles or whatever and makes the tree explode in the background. I thought that was a really cool shot, and it looked really awesome, I thought.
Yeah, the effects are pretty whole cool. Oil tanker thing exploding is pretty good, you know?
Car destroyed.
Yeah.
My sister was like, I thought he saved the car. I can't believe he just saved them.
The car's glowing, following him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were trying to fake their deaths there. I think that's why he let the car go.
Yes, of course.
Although the
mad. It was like, that's my husband's car. Like, she seems to handle that loss pretty well.
Yeah.
Beloved Mustang.
Yeah. I've got to say, though, that The Lonely Island has contaminated me in that every time a cool guy doesn't look at an explosion, I think of that song. he's walking away from that explosion with Karen Allen in his arms. That was the first thing that popped into my head. So damn you, Lonely Island. But
it's so true, though. I mean, it's like cool guys never look back at the explosion.
Yeah.
No matter who it is, you know, the most they might do is like light their cigar off of it. You know?
Right. Yeah. Or like light a dollar bill and then light their cigar with the burning dollar bill.
Yeah. I love the smell of explosions. What? No, it's blown out your eyes.
Your face is gone, man. Quit lighting your cigar.
I'm all I've got's a cigar now that I have no ability to smell.
Well, Tyler, let's go to you. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, some would say it's a science fiction movie, and it is, but it's not. It's a romance movie, basically. And like you said, Elizabeth, men and women can see it. But like, if you're not a science fiction fan, like, don't veer away from this movie just because it's called Starman. There's aliens at the beginning, but then the rest of it is just people dealing with, you know, love and road trip and getting chased by the government.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's less, it's not science fiction like, I don't know, Dune.
Yeah,
would be a pure science fiction movie that people would not be able to go on a date on and both have a good time.
Yeah.
Not without that cheat sheet they used to hand out.
Yeah, exactly. Did you bring the book? Awesome. I highlighted all the parts that are in the movie. Get some context.
Awesome, Trades. Thank you. I needed this.
Yeah, I think you guys said it as best as it can be said. I agree. I definitely liked this movie way more than I thought I would. Pretty awesome performances.
Yeah, Brant's pick.
Pretty awesome performances from everybody. And yeah, just like kind of a feel-good movie that they really don't make anymore today. So good stuff. Well, Tyler, we were talking a little bit right before the show began about what we're going to be watching next week, and you revealed to me some sad news that the Apple II is actually broken down. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have to get my hands dirty in the next couple of weeks and fix that thing up. But you're going to be busy at Sundance. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So it's actually kind of a happy coincidence that the Apple II happens to break down
I'm
going to be gone for a little while at Sundance. So
it's a good way to look at it, man.
Yeah, definitely. There's the possibility, and I don't want to necessarily promise anything because we've done this a couple times in the past where we've like said that we were going to watch
people
a movie
got pissed.
And then it went off of Netflix instant before we had a chance to watch it, so we ended up just watching something else totally random, and I feel really bad for the people who happen to actually watch the movie that we told them to watch. So for those of you who don't really care about for those of you who might be willing to take a risk, we may be watching Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow whenever our next episode is going to be. But if that, like I said, if it goes off of Netflix instant, there's no way we're going to watch that.
Yeah.
So if you
we'll
feel
watch
like
Mechagodzilla instead,
if you feel like taking that risk and watching that movie, then go for it. And maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that. Otherwise, just kind of keep your eyes peeled to our Twitter feed, actually, and then we'll announce as soon as we figure out what we're going to watch. So you guys can follow us on Twitter at NJNM Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. You can also email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 904-469-6566. So let's go through really quickly and read I guess the new Twitter followers. We have, I think, three. Aholms64. So thanks for the follow there.
Aholms.
This one may or may not be spam, but I'm going to read it anyway. It's Alvera Hakeg. I'm not even going to bother spelling that.
Alvera. What up?
Go to our Twitter page if you're really interested in how that's spelled. And then Instant Netflix is following us as well.
Yes. So.
Finally, a little reciprocation there. I'm joking.
Do so much business.
We have one email that's actually really good. I'm going to read that really quick if you guys don't mind. So here we go. Hey, NJNM. I just listened to your Jackie Chan double feature episode and loved it. I'm a big fan of Mr. Chan's work for a long time and feel as if his movies are often underrated. One thing I don't think you mentioned about Rumble in the Bronx is that Jackie broke his foot during one of the stunts and still finished filming the movie. It happened when he jumped onto the hovercraft. If you did mention it, I'm sorry, I listened while I'm at work and someone may have distracted me. If I may be so bold as to suggest another Chantastic Voyage, you should watch Fearless Hyena. It's so old, he was still calling himself Jackie Chan with a Y instead of an IE. It is by far my favorite movie from him. The action scenes are fantastic, and the voiceovers are so ridiculous, it's funny. Thanks for all the work you guys do and for giving it to us for free. I would not make it through a day of work without my podcast. I'm looking forward to the upcoming Starman episode, and we'll be watching it soon. Alex Holmes. So thanks
for
the
meta.
The email, Alex. I definitely appreciate that.
He actually put a cover over his foot cast that looked like a shoe.
You're talking about Jackie Chan in Rumble in the Bronx. Okay.
No, not the guy that sent the email.
Right, yeah.
Because I don't know why I would know that. But yeah, he, like in the blooper credits, I guess, like he showed his cast that his foot was in, and then covered it with a shoe cover that made it look like he was still wearing tennis shoes.
Yeah.
I don't know if we did mention that, but that was one of the, yeah, it was kind of the funnier aspects of the film.
Yeah, and like, if I recall correctly, his jeans weren't even real jeans. They were like almost bell bottoms, so they could fit around this massive cast thing, yeah. But just with the use of perspective and the way that they used the camera, because the shoe cast was like this massive oversized thing, obviously, but it looked, you know, not, you couldn't really tell while you're watching the movie, yeah. Unless you noticed. You know, unless you knew to look for it,
because that hovercraft scene was badass.
That was pretty cool. All right, so let's go ahead and finish up with the character name game. Tyler, you want to tell us the character one more time?
Yeah, yes, I do. I actually forgot it, so I'm gonna bring up my cue card here.
Elizabeth, he's gonna tell us the name of this character, and you and I have to guess what movie this character was from, and there has to be some sort of loose connection to a film that was actually released in wide release at the box office this past weekend. So,
okay.
Green Hornet, I'm guessing, is probably the only real connection there, but we'll see.
All right, the character name game this week is Alicia Nash.
Alicia Nash. All right. I'm going to say Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
Ooh. No.
Oh.
Elizabeth?
Well, I'm guessing it has to be... Yeah, I'm guessing a Cameron Diaz role.
Or actually, The Dilemma came out this weekend, too.
Oh.
Hmm.
Yeah, because, like, it's... trying to think. Yeah, now I'm thinking that sounds like Winona Ryder.
Alicia Nash.
Maybe Requiem for a Dream?
That is incorrect, Ben. But you're hot.
Ooh, all right.
Elizabeth, take a guess before Ben gets it. Ben always gets it.
All right.
Think
so
of the think of the path he's taking.
It's got it. Yeah, I'm thinking Jennifer Connelly. Then it's not, oh, I know it. It's
not The Rocketeer.
No, it's not The Rocketeer. What's It's a Beautiful Mind. It's the wife.
Correct.
There we go. Nice.
We got a new champ.
Yeah, we do.
Woo!
That's awesome.
That I really did not think I was getting that. It was like,
cool.
Stars. Yeah, Jennifer Connelly played Alicia Nash, I believe. Russell Crowe, John Nash's wife in The Beautiful Mind, and she's, I guess, Vince Vaughn's girlfriend in The Dilemma.
Yes.
Featuring Kevin James.
Awesome.
Hardest working man in Hollywood.
Wow. I'm not going to comment. Not going to comment on that. Okay, so let's go ahead and just go around the circle and tell everybody.
Grown-ups. Gold winner.
You might be right, sadly.
People's choice champ.
Go around and tell everybody where people can find more of your work on the internet. Tyler, let's start with you.
Yeah, sure. You can find me at The Solar Sentinel and at Destigeddon and on Geek Tyrant and on this podcast.
Nice. Elizabeth?
Film.com and Chud.com. And I'm actually – there's going to be an overseas blog that I'm writing for soon, but I'll announce it when a piece goes up.
Cool. And you're on Twitter too, right?
And I'm on Twitter at Elizabeth Rapp.
Nice.
Hope it's like a Chinese black market website.
No, it's British, so.
Oh, cool. British.
Yeah.
Nice. Wait, governor?
Yeah, that's how I feel. So Leon doesn't know.
I'll be blogging from Greenwich time there.
Yeah, it's actually a little off. It's like I don't have to blog live for them or anything, but it's like talking to the editor. And it's like I can't remember when English time is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 5 hours. Yeah. Ahead of
and even
time.
Like counting like 8 hours doesn't quite work because then I'll suddenly get an email. It's like, what time is it there?
Yeah,
you just need followers.
They're calling home either because it's like I would count 8 hours and I was like, oh, it's like 5 p.m. and it'd be like 1 a.m. So.
Just get followers and readers that only read blogs at 4 a.m.
Yeah,
a night out.
All right, so you guys can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears, writing for GeekTyrant.com, Filmonic.com, NotJustNewMovies.com, which is the namesake for this podcast, and you can find me and some of the other guys on the Geek Tyrant Weekly podcast. Music for this show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at GTBandits.com, and they are also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out over there. Special thanks to Elizabeth Rapp for stopping by and donating some of her time to help us out talking about Starman. Elizabeth, thanks for joining.
Okay. Thank you for having me. It's
absolutely.
Always fun.
And so we're going to be taking a little bit of a break, but keep your eyes peeled to our Twitter feed, and we'll let you guys know what we're going to be watching in the weeks to come. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Later.
all the money that